Kia ora e te whānau, haere mai to the Festival One podcast. Today you will be listening to a seminar from Festival One 2020. This year we dived into the theme of hope, specifically hope in, not hope for. We trust you will enjoy and be encouraged through this collection of seminars. For more about Festival One, head to our website, festival.one.
Hey, kia ora everyone. Thank you so much for coming out. It is hot, but we are almost done for the day, and it is my absolute pleasure to introduce Dan Sheed to you all. Couple of facts about him. He loves coffee, he loves books with slipcases, and he loves punk rock. He's going to My Chemical Romance in March, and he is so excited about it. Dan also had a beautiful son 2 years ago now, Jimmy?
One and a half
with his wife, Gab, and he also co-founded Central Vineyard Church, which is my church, and it's a place that is really committed to being salt and light in the world and following the way of Jesus in Auckland right now. And Dan is such a huge part of fostering that community. He's been on a journey for about a year now going through the Psalms, is that about right?
Yeah.
And he's going to share that with us today. So if you want to join me in giving him a big round of applause.
Thank you, Laura. And I'll put you through my punk rock discipleship course as soon as possible, and we'll sort out the whole My Chemical Romance being a punk band, because they're not, all right? It's just not. Thank you. Hey, good on you. 4 o'clock, and let's do some theology. Yeah. Let me hear a T.
T.
Let me hear an H.
H.
E.
E.
O.
O.
L.
L.
O.
O.
G.
G.
Y.
Y.
What have we got?
Why,
4 o'clock in this place. You guys are crazy. I'll tell you what, if I was looking through the thing as a punter, I don't know if I would have come. So thank you. Thank you for coming at 4 o'clock on a Saturday to this session. We are going to be talking about the Psalms. And as Laura introduced me and said, 2 years ago, it was actually 2018, I spent the year praying through the Psalms with a little Eugene Peterson book called Praying the Psalms. Every day, prayed my way through it, bit by bit by bit. And it just totally rocked my world, and it totally gave me a different view. And when I was asked to do a talk here on hope and to talk about some stuff from the scriptures, it was just a no-brainer for me as we thought about how can we talk about the scriptures and hope. There's a whole heap of places we could go, a whole heap of places we could look to. But today, this is where we're looking. We're looking in the book of the Psalms. So if we're to line up the whole Bible, and if we're to line it up like in individual books, the Psalms is this book in the middle. Pull it out. It's this big, thick book. And here's the facts. 150 Hebrew poems, many of them have been put to song. This is what the theologian Tom Wright has to say about these poems. I love this. Let's get started with this. The Psalms are among the oldest poems in the world, and they still rank with any poetry in any culture, ancient or modern, from anywhere in the world. They are full of power and passion, horrendous misery, and unrestrained jubilation, tender sensitivity, and powerful hope. Anyone at all whose heart is open to new dimensions of human experience, anyone who loves good writing, anyone who wants a window into the bright lights in the dark corners of the human soul, anyone open to the beautiful expression of a larger vision of reality should react to these poems like someone who hasn't had a good meal for a week or two. I pastor people for a living. And when I ask them about how they're going with reading the scriptures, reading the Psalms, often their response to me is not that kind of response. It's not that the scriptures are like a meal that I need to just completely, completely devour. So I guess the opening question today for us as we just kick this idea around is your view of the scriptures, is your reality of the scriptures, is your experience of the scriptures that kind of one? And if it's not, then how can we start to make it so? How could we have that kind of experience when it comes to the scriptures? The other facts are for the Book of Psalms, it's a range of authors. You know, David's often, he's pretty high regarded when it comes to this, the sons of Korah. Moses sneaks in with one. There's a bunch of different people who are making up this collection. There's 5 volumes. So if you were to open the Book of Psalms, you'll notice that there's at times the book one The volume one of the first section, and then there's the second and the third and the fourth and the fifth. And for us, in our church community, Psalm 107 is a really important psalm to us, and it's the first book. It's the first psalm of the fifth book of Psalms. So it's broken into some volumes. There's some themes in those volumes. We're not going to talk about that today, but just so that you know, this book has got kind of like a little bit of a subsections in it as well. And in there's five different main styles of the way that the Psalms are assembled and what they're trying to say. There's praise psalms, there's wisdom psalms, there's lament psalms, there's hope psalms, and there's thanksgiving psalms. Something important to think about with the psalms is it's like this. It's like a massive collection of tools. And each tool, if you've used tools before, you'll know the tool that you need for the job is the tool you need. And the tool that does that job is the tool that does that job. And you shouldn't try and make another tool do something it's not trying to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you have to measure something, it's no good bringing a hammer. And if you have to put a nail into something, it's not the best to bring like the little like scribe. You need to bring the right tool to the right moment. And often the wrestle that we're having with Scripture, often a lot of the frustration I experience with people as they're talking about the Scriptures with me is this problem. It's I'm mishandling what I have in my hand. I don't know what it is. I don't know which tool it is. I don't know what it's trying to do in this moment. Is it trying to be the hammer or is it trying to be the ruler? Which one is it? What is it trying to be? Is it trying to be lament or is it trying to be praise? Is it trying to be hope? Is it trying to be wisdom? What is it? And it's such an important part of this conversation today is to realize that different parts of the Psalms are these different tools. And today, just for these next 20 or 25 minutes, and then we're actually going to take questions at the end. So if you have a question, we're going to send a microphone around for the last little bit. And we'll see if we can have a bit of a conversation about those things. But for the next 25 minutes or so, I want to just richly explore how we handle these Psalms of hope. How do we use these Psalms of hope to be exactly as they're meant to be? The Psalms of hope. Not trying to use them as a different tool. Not trying to treat them as something they're not. But let them be what they are and trying to do what they're doing. So before we do that, we just have to talk for a brief couple of minutes about reading. Because I'm realizing more and more these days, reading in itself is actually becoming a discipline. It's actually becoming something that we have to choose to do. We're actually being trained through our cell phones to read much quicker and much smaller amounts of information. And sitting down and opening a book and sitting down and reading the whole book is becoming more and more of a challenge. And as we progress through history even further, it's going to become more and more so. To choose to read is a discipline. It's becoming a spiritual and sacred discipline. And so I just want to ask for a couple of seconds, what is it to read? What is reading? Because if we're going to talk about the Psalms, we're talking about something you read. Yep, you can sing them too, you can chant them too, but mainly in our Bibles, it's this book to read. So what is reading? Well, firstly, reading mechanically is simply just, I have eyes, you have eyes, I have put some symbols up here, and you can use your eyes and look and interpret those symbols through your brain to be able to know this is what those symbols are saying. They're saying the word mechanically. I think I've spelled that right. I have spelled that right. Correct. Good. Using our eyes. Like you are taking in the information. The information is being interpreted and put through in your brain. And then you are then using that. You have memories. You have learnt things in your brain that have been programmed so that you know what those words mean. You have memories of how those words, what those words mean. And you're able to read. That's how reading works, right? Mechanical, correct? Anyone want to debate that? Cool, we'll move on. It's also imaginative. For all of the mechanics of reading, sitting down and taking in information and it going through our brains, there's also this imaginative part where it's actually a story that we can enter. I don't know about you, but have you had that moment recently when you've read something and suddenly reality sort of dims down? And you start going to wherever that thing is that your reading is taking you. Maybe it's, I don't know, the First World War, flying a plane, and your name is Biggles, and you're flying and you're fighting and shooting down the bad guy. Or maybe your name is Deborah, and you're in love with some rugged Texan rodeo guy who's got your attention. I don't know what you read. But you know that moment when suddenly, like, you forget you're sitting in the chair, you forget you're sitting in the cafe, you forget you're doing what you're doing, and what you are reading has taken you somewhere. Your imagination has sparked, and you're gone, you're there. This is also what reading does. It gets our imagination going, and we go there.
C.S. Lewis wrote a terrific book called An Experiment in Criticism. Show of hands, who has read An Experiment in Criticism by C.S. Lewis? Wow. One hand. You and me. C.S. Lewis wanted to ask a question, and he answered it in this book. Why do we pick up some things and we don't like them? And why do we pick up some things and we do like them? What is it to be critical? It's not a very big book. Not many people have read it. But it is a terrific little book on examining this thing of why do I pick up a certain book and 5 pages in, I'm bored and I don't want to go there anymore. Bleh. Why do I watch a movie and I go home telling my friends about how great that movie was? That movie just was the best thing I've ever seen. What's that? What is that critical moment? So I got a heap of quotes here from C.S. Lewis. Like I said just before, reading for me is a discipline. I wasn't actually that big a reader in school. I was an art student. I preferred to draw things than write about things. So I've had to learn the hard way how to actually read and retain and discipline myself. So when I read a book like this one, which I read a few years ago, I open a note on my phone and I actually start jotting my way down through that book. And I take photos of my favorite quotes and I start tracking a little summary. And this is what C.S. Lewis says in An Experiment in Criticism. So the bits in quote marks are going to be his, and the rest of it is just a summary. I'll talk my way through this. He says this, reading is done in either a literary or an unliterary way. The primary distinction between the two is that the unliterary reader uses books for their own purposes, where the literary reader actively receives them. Active reception requires that we open ourselves up to what a text can do to us by being in its totality precisely the thing it is. This means we allow the text to be itself. We receive it on its own terms. It means we don't expect poetry to be prose or fiction to be fact, though both can be equally true. It means we refuse to impose our will upon the text. In this way, we can get out of ourselves and into another. We can come to see with other eyes, to imagine with other imaginations, to feel with other hearts as well as with our own. C.S. Lewis is saying, actually, some of us read, and because we don't want to go there, we just park it. We can't actually have humility to go into what that text is trying to get us to. And for some of us, we can get it, open it, and just let ourselves start to immerse in what that is saying. What is it saying? What is it saying? He goes on to say this. This is not our normal way of interacting with the world. Rather, we see the whole world from one point of view with a perspective and a selectiveness peculiar to ourselves. It's been formed in us, and it's there. There's nothing necessarily wrong with this particularly, but literary reading gives us other lenses to see through, other shoes to walk in, other experiences to learn from. This is why Lewis suggests that our primary concern while reading should be with entering fully into the opinions and therefore also the attitudes, the feelings, and the total experience of others. If we do this, we can actually delight to enter into the other man's beliefs, even though we may think them untrue, and into their passions, though we think them depraved, and also into their imaginations, though they lack all realism of content. Reading into this non-imperialistic, empathetic, and open-hearted way allows us to encounter, appreciate, and receive perspectives that differ from our own. It allows us to enter into them and walk around for a while to experience life from that vantage before returning to our own. We must return to our own perspective when we close the book, for we remain ourselves, even as we become those countless others. But the perspectives that we return to may have changed. They may be larger, more expansive. They may have become more of the other with all their particularity and distinctiveness. We can be enlarged and transformed through our reading, and the ways we inhabit the world might be forever changed, but only if we are willing to actively receive what the work has to offer, to look, listen, receive, and get ourselves out of the way. Now, why did I show you that big quote? Sorry, it took so long to get through it. I showed you that big quote because there's a big truth in there. And it's what I was trying to say before. We must receive a psalm for as it is, by who it was by, and for what it was for. We We need to stop trying to make the text do something it's not trying to do. Let it be itself and enter into it. So when we choose to read the Psalms, we have to realize we're entering a whole other world. We're entering into a whole other way of seeing reality. And we must have a look around as it was being looked around at then. This is not a 21st century Aotearoa book. It is a book of Hebrew poetry. And we are reading the subtitled foreign film version. We're reading the version that has got these subtitles coming up in English so that we can interact with it. We have to do a bit of work here. This takes critical work. The other thing is that reading the Psalms properly requires slowing down. We have to stop because that's hard work. You can't just blast through one and be like, got it, move on. That's not the point of these at all. The point of the Psalms is to slow down. And I don't know about you, but this is one of the most needed things in our cultural moment today. The need of slowing ourselves down. Now, I was a skateboarder as a teenager. And so, I don't know if you've gone up to the skate ramp and watched the skaters skating. But if they're skating, you might see them doing some sweet tricks. And if you have no idea about what those tricks are and you see one done, you have no idea what that trick was. But I could stand there and I could tell you what that trick was. And one of the reasons I can do that is because as I was growing up, I used to read skate magazines, and they used to have these photos which break down the trick. So this is Andrew Reynolds, and he's doing a inward heel flip down a triple set. And you might look at that and go, I have no idea. Like, it just looks like a dude throwing himself down, and there's a skateboard under his feet. But to me, there's a trick being done here because I know how to read it. I know what he's doing. So he's using his heel side of his foot, not his toe side. So that means it's not a kick flip, it's a heel flip. The board's doing the 180, but he's not. So that means it's not a front side flip. It's actually just it's a varial flip. So it's an inside heel varial down the stairs. Got it? Got it? Yeah? So this sequence of photos helps me to see the trick. And so it is when we read the book of Psalms. So it is when we read scripture. We have to slow down. We have to stop reading this thing for like the word for today. That's my minute. I'm moving on now. And we have to slow it down and sit with it. Take our time. Eugene Peterson, who's one of the great heroes of my life, says, reading is a gift, but only if the words are taken into the soul. Eaten, chewed, gnawed, received in unhurried delight. Received in unhurried delight. The other thing about the Psalms is that they require vulnerability. They require vulnerability. And here's the truth of vulnerability. It is about exposure. It is about showing up and revealing. And vulnerability is a two-way street. And the scriptures, especially the Psalms, are incredibly vulnerable. I don't know if you've read the Psalms lately. Forget the 23rd Psalm. We know how nice that one is. But there's some other ones in there. And it's incredibly, incredibly vulnerable. Letting out grief and lament. Letting out how the psalmist really thinks about God. Like, this stuff could be almost like heretical. Like, if someone came into your church and said some of the things they're saying, you'd say, I think you need to probably go talk to a counselor about this. This is worrying. There's a problem here. Yet this is what's in the Psalms. This is what's in our Bibles. The text is incredibly open and honest and vulnerable. And it's asking of us the same thing. Will you be as vulnerable back? Will you be that two-way street? Will you let that Psalm speak to you and show you how honest you can be back to God? And just as David was, just as the sons of Korah was, just as Moses was, you too can be. You too can be that honest with God. That you too can be that expressive with God. You too can open up like that. You're allowed to. This open and honest dialogue, this vulnerability, is just called prayer. It's nothing new. But I think it's a lot more open and honest than a lot of us would like to think it is, or what a lot of us think prayer could be. And the Psalms call us to that. My friend John Mark Comer says this: most people are bored with prayer because they aren't actually praying. They're pretending. They are filtering things and bringing what's left to God. The psalmists don't do that. Morning, noon and night, they honestly cry out to God. Which brings us to the topic of hope. This is just the last couple of minutes, and then we'll throw open for some questions. You guys are doing so well. I know it's so warm in here. We're just about finished. I'm going to read Psalm 43. Could you do something for me? This has become more important to me in more recent years of life. And I grew up in a tradition where we didn't really do these kinds of things. But just for the sake of today, would you please stand with me as I read the scriptures? Also because it's 4:23 on a really hot day and some of you are starting to fade off. So, gotcha. As I read this, this is a psalm. This is the word of the Lord. This is the Holy Scriptures. And let us open our hearts and let us receive the vulnerable gift that they are for us today. And that by His Spirit, He may speak to us. Psalm 43. Declare me innocent, O God. Defend me against these ungodly people. Rescue me from these unjust liars. For you are God, my only safe haven. Why have you tossed me aside? Why must I wander around in grief, oppressed by my enemies? Would you send your light and your truth? Let them guide me. Let them lead me to your holy mountain, to the place where you are. There I will go to the altar of God, to God, the source of all my joy. And I will praise you with my harp. O God, my God, why am I discouraged? Why is my heart so sad? I will put my hope in God. I will praise Him again, my Savior, my God. Amen. Please grab a seat again. Psalm 43. As I was just saying before, incredibly honest, open, and vulnerable. I don't know about you, but my prayer life doesn't look like that very often. But listen to how honest the psalmist is. And then did you hear the end there? I will put my hope in you. I will put my hope in you. Now that word in Hebrew is actually the word yahal. And it means to wait for with confident expectation. Now, the psalmist has good reason to be waiting with confident expectation because the psalmist has seen the things that has happened of God so at hand, so beautifully and wonderfully in his life. He was expressing this thing of the holy mountain, I guess referring to Israel's story of God being on the mountain, giving them the Ten Commandments, the story of their God and what Yahweh has done for them. He's referring to a couple of places in which, yes, I've seen some faithful things. And yet, in the desperation of what he's going through, and in this honest moment, he is expressing his disappointment. And then he gets to this point, he says, I will hope in you, God. In other words, I will wait for you with my confident expectation. My confident expectation. See, hope is not, hey, I just hope you have a great day. In other words, wish. I wish that you might. That's not what we're talking about here. This biblical picture of hope that's in the Psalms is it is a confident expectation. It is this proof, there's some stuff going on that I can lean into, the character of God who has been faithful, His story that is at hand, and I'm leaning into it with my confident expectation. Justin Begbie, who is a theologian from the UK, he says this. It's just such a great line. And if you're taking photos, this is the one you should take a photo of. He says this, we do not hope in the future. We do not hope for the future, we hope from the future. This confident expectation is all about what God has said He will do, and we lean into that promise of His faithful word. So when God says, behold, I'm making all things new, that is the faithful picture we can lean into. God's at the work of doing that. That's His gospel, His good news for us. We lean into it because that's what He's doing. We see it from the future, and we lean in. Now, the psalmist was doing this with all kinds of things. The promise of the Messiah who is yet to come. They're leaning into that with hope. He is yet to come. He will come and deliver us and do these things. They lean in with hope to the reality of what the prophets have said. They lean into the story of God and its faithfulness so far. But they lean into the things he says he's going to do. And that is what this is all about when it comes to the Psalms. So to pray the Psalms, we're landing now. To pray the Psalms is to do as the psalmist did. So I started with all this work to try and show you, like, it's about getting in there, looking around, seeing what it is, and then not making any excuses or changing it for what it's not. We're not doing that. We're just going to keep it as it is. What is it? It's confident expectation. And so if it's confident expectation, it is this, I'm going to remember God's future. Does that make sense? I'm going to remember it. I'm going to bring it back to my memory, even though it's this thing that's going to happen yet. I'm going to back to the future this. And I'm gonna get myself so I'm aware of what God has said he is going to do because of his faithful word that he has said it with. Do you see that? And that's what this is all about. That's what the praying of the Psalms is all about. When we get to these scriptures and it talks about the coming Messiah, we can lean into the faithfulness of God who has brought about his Messiah. When it gets to these other parts where it talks about the slaves getting set free into the things of freedom, we can lean into that because that's our story too. That's what God's doing with us. He's bringing us out of the lands of slavery and into lands of freedom. When we lean into the Psalms that talk about justice for the poor, we should realize that that too is to be our call to justice, that we too are to be the people who lean into that story. God, make us people who lean into your hopeful picture for the poor, who lean into your hopeful picture for those who are not experiencing justice at the moment. See, as we experience these things of the Psalms, we too are then changed to go and change them as well. So therefore, as we finish with 15 seconds to go on my clock, may the Psalms give you an imagination for God's future. May they give you an imagination for God's future. May the Psalms may not just be, oh, the 23rd Psalm, learnt it. May the Psalms become a text that you immerse yourself in, that you may be able to see the way God sees the future and the way he sees you. The end. Finish. Mic drop. Any questions? Oh, thank you. It's really not needed. But any questions? We've got a couple of minutes. We've left some time for this. So, yeah, we're going to get a microphone because it's being recorded. So just as long as you're okay with that, I think it's being recorded. And just be aware that if you ask a question, that it's going to be on there. Is that okay? Yep, cool. Here it comes.
So there are parts in the Psalms where the psalmists are talking to God about their enemies.
Yes.
And they sometimes lay out quite graphically what they want God to do to their enemies.
Very much so.
And we sort of struggled to know what we should take from that today.
Yeah. Okay, so if you were just to pick up the book of Psalms and only read that, you'd have a really warped picture of God, wouldn't you? Like if you had no other texts and you just pulled the Psalms out and that was the only book you had and you're reading like, okay, take them down, take the firstborns down to the river and smash them against the rocks, for example. That's a bit different to the 23rd Psalm. Like, is this a schizophrenic God we're dealing with here? Yeah. So what you have to realize is that the Psalms are not trying to tell us about what God's like. What the Psalms are trying to do is they're trying to tell you about how honest you can be as a human being, and they're trying to tell you about what you can be expressive about when it comes to the injustices in the world. Does that make sense? So it's not actually about this is what necessarily God thinks about all of the enemies and what he's like. We can park that just for a minute and just go, firstly, these are human beings expressing honestly, openly, and vulnerably, and hopefully about the things that are around them. It's not a cushy life. It's not a nice life. And things have been done wrong. And they're expressing that in this kind of way. And man, it's uncomfortable, right? Like, it's just so uncomfortable. But actually, that's actually the challenge that I'm kind of asking of us a little bit today is like, actually, we're invited into reading the Psalms in that kind of way, that the uncomfort would stir us and would show us our own brokenness and our own sense of the enemy and our own sense of that brokenness that's in our hearts and to the person around us. And we would live it. And then there's the sense of Yahweh and God that you have to deal with as well. And you have to remind yourself of the type of world that it was set in. You know, even the worldview. So, for example, we've only seen this photo of the world floating around like it is in space. We've only seen ourselves for the last 50 years. Okay, so that's a bit of a perspective shift, right? So for 50 years, we have this photo from space of Earth floating in the universe. We've looked back on ourselves and gone, wow, that's what Earth looks like floating in the world. That's our perspective now. We've all grown up with it, most of us. But back then, that was not their worldview. No one had taken a photo from a satellite. No one had figured out how the world was sitting in the cosmos. Everything was working the wrong way around. They thought that the world was like a big flat dish. It was like flat Earth theory, but it was way back then. Like, it's not a new thing, the whole flat Earth thing, guys. It was literally like, here's the first world, here's the ancient worldview. The world is like a big flat dish, and there's this like sort of dome placed over it, and everything's moving through the dome, you know? And the sun moves across the dome, and the stars move across the dome, and there's water kind of holding it up, filament, and like, this is how they see the world. And so again, we have to realize that this is the way they're seeing how God acts, and this is the way they're expressing some of that. So there's a bit of hard work to be done when it comes to that. But my first answer would be this, just when we get to those texts, don't ignore them. Don't just go, too hard, or not in my Bible, or that's not my God. Realize the sign of the human heart it's trying to draw you to. Realize the unjust that it's trying to point out. And start to work with that a little bit. Does that answer your question? Yeah? Okay. Question over here.
Mine's kind of more of a comment rather than a question. Hey, so your thing's actually really cool and helpful. So something which I've personally been struggling with is a very small verse in Psalm chapter 5, which says, which I mean almost every single Christian will be like, that's not what God is like, which says, God hates those who are evil. And like everybody's like, well, God only hates the sin, not the sinner. And then I read that, I'm like, oh, hang on a moment.
Sure.
I guess like hearing what you've just said about Psalms is actually really helpful for that because it kind of like helps bring more into that, I guess. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like, it's so schizophrenic. Because then, like, what do you do where it's like, so it says that hates this, and then we get one of the most perhaps liberating scriptures. Where's it gone? I can't find it off the top of my head. But the one that says, you know, as far as the east is from the west, you've removed my transgressions from me. You are, I've lost my place in my Bible. That's terrible. Maybe someone could help me out off the top of their heads. But we've got this like, okay, well, which one is it? Because we've got the scriptures that are saying like, he's just absolutely everlasting. You cannot run him dry love. And then he's like doing that. So which one is it? And again, we've got to remember the Psalms is trying to get us to see the human experience and what we can do with God and how honest we can be. And with that, there's going to be the cracks and the brokenness and the misconceptions. And also there's going to be the call to that evil to say like, but there is evil. So don't discard it. Evil is extending across our globe in all kinds of horrible ways. So don't just park evil over there as a like a cute idea. No. You have to let that confront you too. There's evil advancing in my heart and in the world. It's not going away. But what's God's reaction to that? Well, I have to dig a bit deeper. More questions? Or comments? Laura, where are you? There. Just one in the middle. We'll just do this for another couple of minutes, then we're going to finish up.
So you mentioned kind of we need to be looking, when we're in the Psalms, we need to look for what was the original purpose, what was originally being said. What do you recommend is the best way to really find that original purpose for all the Psalms where there sometimes isn't headings or extra information along with them?
Great question. Yeah, we live in an incredibly rich time of the church where scholars are doing incredible work. And we have to probably actually put our hands up and say that the academics and the scholars amongst the church are a gift to the church and acknowledge that. And there's some great help that we can get with people who have been doing great work around that. So one easy place that you could get right now on your phone is something called the Bible Project. Bible Project's run out of Portland in the USA. And it's a bunch of incredible theologians, incredible people who are putting together very helpful animated videos to help you understand the world that these scriptures were sitting in. They have an incredible website, free resources, absolutely amazing. You should. That's a first port of call, the Bible Project. Go there and watch their video on the Psalms. Start there and get yourself immersed in their world. They've got extra stuff you can read. But then from there, I'd say you've got to just find some of those selected, beautiful voices of the church. For me, it's someone like a Eugene Peterson or an N.T. Wright or a Scott McKnight. Like, there's people that I'm just like, these guys are doing the hard work, and that's what they are. They're the gift to the church for these things, and I'm going to listen to that hard work. I'm going to have that inform me. Does that help? You know, like, it's one thing to go ask someone's opinion. I'm not telling you to do that. Like, what do you think? And we wallow in our own ignorance. What I'm saying is go to someone who's done the work and reflect from them. I think discipleship's all about, you know, finding the people who we could say they are imitating Christ, so I will imitate them. I want Christ. He's my imitation. And if I find people along the way who are doing a great job of that, I too will do that. And those are some of the authors in my life that I just think, man, love the imitation. I'm getting in and amongst that, and I'm going to get what they're given, you know. So that's what I would say. The Bible Project is fantastic. If you haven't heard of it, they do a great app called Read Scripture. You can read the entire scriptures this year with little Bible videos coming up to help you along the way. Learn what it's about, understand what it is. It's very, very helpful. Highly recommend it. One more question maybe? Should we just do one more if there is one? And we'll finish there because it's nearly barbecue time. Sound good? Down here. We'll make this the last one.
Just something I've been thinking of and be interested in what you've got through like the lens of Psalms is the idea, is hope something that arises within us, or can you muster it up? Can you choose it? Can you make it happen? Or is it something that from other things that hope is birthed? And what
kind of Psalms? Great question. So Paul uses the little sort of trinity of faith, hope and love. And the way that I've started to understand this in more recent, maybe 6 or 7 years, As I grew up in a Christian home, I had a great building of faith. I learnt love. I learnt it by seeing my family loving the people around them and their community. We had all sorts of people over at Christmas time that needed a place to eat, all that sort of stuff. I experienced love in that kind of way. So I had faith and love dialed, right? Growing in my faith, love is about this thing of loving my God, worshipping Him, and loving His creation, loving the people around. But hope was my misunderstanding. And what I thought hope was like, fingers crossed, this is all going to work. Oh, I hope it does. I hope what we're all talking about is actually true. And that's not hope. So what I've realized hope is hope is this engagement of faith and saying, my faith is that I am actually putting all of the chips in on this future that God is saying. And He's telling me, this is what He is doing, so get on and amongst it and love people as His church, because that's the story. And I think, you know, if you want to get a framework of that, go to Ephesians chapter 1. And in Ephesians chapter 1, there's this beautiful opening to the book where they say, you know, there's the Father, the Son, and the Spirit laid out. There's this Trinitarian picture laid out. And in that Trinitarian picture, each sort of person of the Trinity is given their job. And it says that the Spirit is empowering us, seal upon us as His church to do the things that He has revealed. So there it is again. Like, it's not about a mustering up. It's about He's placing it on us, that the Spirit is actually given to us to seal it, to say, this is the hope, this is the picture. So now, here's my Spirit to go and live it, to go and put it into action. Does that make sense? So I think my immature answer would have been, oh, you muster it up, you get more hopeful. Arise, hope, you know, and like I think there's an element of sort of speaking to your soul a little bit like that. But I think actually what hope really is it's about going, no, what I have to listen. What is God saying? What is the future of God's story? And I have to put my faith into that, my confidence into that, my trust into that. So it's you can't separate them. And it's this total package of faith, hope, and love being lived out. And they all inform each other. And I think it's a beautiful mix. So how's that? Should we finish there? So go. My blessing was this. I'll just remind you. May the Psalms give you an imagination for God's future. May you go and enjoy the rest of your festival, and may you develop an imagination for what God is calling us all to as His church. God bless you.
For more about Festival One, head to our website, festival.one. I'm trying too hard to make you feel